Welcome to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 70, Brendan Zarnt. You know, I just love people who have figured out their why. You know, they're just so focused, just so intentional. And you know, what I've seen with the successful sellers that I've interviewed is there's a sharpening that goes on. Once you know where you're going and why you're going, more importantly, why you're going, right, where you want to go, you get to really look at everything through a set of glasses that make sure it fits that mold or don't do it. And every time you do it, you get a little sharper. The point of a kind of like a knife, it just gets a little sharper. And I think Brendan's a great example of that. You know, he is a single dad, and we spend a lot of time talking about that and the responsibilities there and how, you know, having that real purpose can make you successful or not. But in his case, it has. And so let's get into the podcast. All right, welcome back to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. Man, and tonight's guest has a story, and I love a story because, you know, I try not to get guests that buy low and sell high because I think most people do that, and that's really the goal, and if you're not doing that, that's a problem. That's the secret. There it is, buy low, sell high, right? But what I love is a story about – because I think we all have a story. I think this is – this has been a great venue for a lot of people who have figured out in their life that they're really good at something. And I think this is a one of those kind of really good stories. And I'm really excited to have Brendan Zarnt on tonight. Welcome, Brendan.
Hey, thanks for having me, Stephen.
You know, you really do have a great story. And so I'm going to take us – I'm going right there, right away. All right? So I want you to take and give us an introduction about yourself. And then why did you – get started, well, before we even get into that, why you got started on to being an entrepreneur, just take us back. What happened?
You got it. So I essentially use FBA right now. I tell people I use my profession to fund fatherhood. So in a very short amount of time, the FBA program has afforded me the ability to live my life really the way most people can only dream of in a small amount of time. In my daughter's 5.5 years on this earth, I've literally missed one performance of hers. Yet I've seen, you know, hundreds of those moments that most fathers miss out on. So, but when I started the business, I had less than zero to start with. So I had at the time no job. I had no savings. And when I say no, I mean literally I didn't have a penny to my name after about 1 month's worth of money to cover bills. I had no second income, no spousal support, little moral support and financial support from family. And I was a single father with a daughter that I had to care for and a house to pay for. So it was incredibly interesting starting this business in that manner. Yet somehow, with seemingly insurmountable odds, I was able to make it and thrive. So
I don't want to get too personal, but I do want to ask this question. Yeah. So obviously there's a mother to the child,
sure.
And you were in a house. So you got so there was a split, and
that's
you got you kept everything.
Well,
the house and that. I mean, that's what I meant. And the child, you took custody of the child. And so that's very rare in today's day and age,
right,
well,
right.
For the man. So obviously that says something about you, you know, and I don't want to put anybody else down, but that says something about the spouse too.
Right, right.
So that's a very, very difficult time. How do you as a man, you know, rise up? I mean, you know, we're bred to be providers, right? That's our thing, right? Eat something, kill,
no
you know, drag it home. Right.
Yep.
So obviously you're not going to fail and there's no way you're going to fail because that's what dads do. Mm-hmm. But, you know, being Mr. Mom in addition just can't be easy, especially 5.5-year-old. And I didn't have girls. Both of my sons are boys. I do have granddaughters now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a different world. It's a completely different world. I'm like, oh, my God.
Right.
Thank God I never had daughters. How did you get through that? You know, just and especially if you didn't have a lot of other outside family help.
Yeah. Well, when I look back, I mean, It almost gives me anxiety just thinking about it. But to be clear, I split my daughter with my ex 50-50. So I don't have sole custody, but
okay.
You know, having her is a huge part of my life. But So I started this business pretty much on accident. So in January of 15, so this is just a little over a year ago, I was let go from my job and essentially only living paycheck to paycheck at that time. So, recovering from a divorce that wiped me out. And I was talking to an old business associate of mine who had an info course on FBA. And we started to talk about it. I knew a little bit about FBA at the time. Well, hadn't really had much of an interest in it, but he wanted to relaunch this course. It was sort of marketed towards the make money online market, the internet marketing niche. And he wanted to relaunch it. So I agreed to partner with him on that project. And, we would split the proceeds 50-50. So I was essentially going to be the case study for this new 2.0 relaunch, so to speak. And without having any income, the only way I was going to learn this process was essentially to find stuff around the house, right? I know you hear the story all the time. Hey, I had $1,000 to my name. I went and got started. I had zero. So I literally took everything I could find in my house, sent it into FBA. And I think in the first 30 days of starting it, I made around $2,500.
That's pretty impressive.
Which I thought was pretty, pretty good without spending a penny. And so as this carried on, as month two carried on, John, who was going to be my partner in this, he became busy with his profession. And I just kept running with what was just supposed to be a case study. But month two, I got busier. Month three, I got even busier. And the rest was history. So suffice to say, the course really never got off the ground because he was busy with his profession. And I had essentially started, in my opinion, a very successful FBA business just over a year later as a result of getting that start. So
was the course, would you credit the course, though, giving you that jump start, or was it the fact that you needed money? What would you credit more? And then you and your tenaciousness.
So real good question. I think it was a little bit of both. Okay. I had no interest in just using it as a proof of concept type of thing. Once I could clearly see that, you were taking advantage of the monstrous reach that Amazon provides, and having that provide that kind of income that quickly, I knew that with even just a little bit of extra effort, that this could be scaled. And so I just took the ball and ran with it. And, I started with used books, a category that I think a lot of people avoid for one reason or another. I know you've had a slew of booksellers.
Yeah. I think a lot of us have started the old sellers. That's an old seller.
Yes.
I'm old, carrying a cane. That's how we all got started.
Yeah.
Typically, is you started with books.
Right.
But a lot of the new people have never slugged or been to a book sale, or which is really, it's tough stuff.
It really is, and it was something that I really didn't have any interest in, but I didn't have a choice because I had no money to make this work. I mean, I literally that next bill is coming. How are you going to make this happen? So, and John, of course, was okay with it because he had other things going on. And his course, although it was outdated, it helped me a little bit. But again, with the nuances with learning how to create your first shipment and all that stuff, I remember pulling my hair out of my head. I mean, it took me probably 72 straight hours of back and forth with seller support and just learning the little things.
And I don't. It's not intuitive. It's a lot harder than people think.
Yeah, initially, yes.
Yeah.
And then you get into the things that really become important, like trying to acquire capital and reinvesting and all of those things. But again, like I said, looking back on it, I don't suggest many people take the risk that I took. but it has done me really, really well in a short amount of time, and I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, you should be. Yeah. You know, you bring up a very good point, and I've heard this from other people. I think Bob Willey suggests this, and a few of the other coaches, is that if you're going to get started in FBA, rather than starting at target clearance, which everybody does, mm-hmm. right? They see this thing, and they go down to NCAP, and they scan it. They send it in like, oh, my God, this thing is ranked, you know, and it's going to sell. I'm going to make $60. Mm-hmm. And by the time they get it done, like you say, there's a learning curve. By the time they finally get that shipment in, it's down to $8 because – being a newbie, right, we've all been there, mm-hmm. is that you don't realize that every target across the country is going to liquidate them, not at the same time. And so they do it in this wave and then this next wave and the next wave, and it works its way across the country. And so what happens is the race to the bottom, right? The first one in makes out, right? Or once everybody else sells out, then that person does. But if you're new, you need the money. So books, though, books are probably the smartest and safest way to do it, generally. Now, I'm told that they counterfeit textbooks. I just heard that story. I'm like, oh, my God, I can't believe that. But stay away from, you know, new textbooks. Let's just say you're doing used textbooks or you're doing used books. It's a very, very inexpensive, right? I mean, you're buying them for a quarter, 50 cents, a dollar.
Oh, yeah.
And you're profiting eight to, you know, hundreds of dollars. But, I mean, generally, you don't want to take anything that you're not going to make less than $8 on. Mm-hmm. And – you know, where can you get a return for 50 cents on to $8, right? There's nothing.
Sure. I mean, I'm almost certain you've spoken ad nauseum about that topic, but the truth of the matter is there are very few models that you can go out and find something on a shelf somewhere in the world for 50 cents and turn around and sell it for $25, $50, $100, but Amazon provides you the vehicle to be able to do that. And, you know, with a little bit of luck along the way, anybody can do this. I don't have a, you know, my degree is in communication at Ohio State. I don't have a master's. You know, I'm not a genius, but I had no choice. So failure wasn't an option for me. I've been able to scale it, and I've been able to do all of it 100% on my own. No VAs, no sourcers. I mean, what other, you know what I mean? Literally, I started with literally zero and just.
Well, you were in sales before that, so you were used to eating what you kill.
Absolutely.
So that is very attractive to you, right? I mean, you're attracted to that. That's, you know, you put the work in, you get the reward,
yeah,
right?
I mean,
there's something to that.
I've never really thought of myself, you know, I feel like I'm a terrible salesman, to be honest with you, but at the same time, I am not afraid to get out in front of people, ask questions, you know, ask stupid questions, right? I mean, there are no stupid questions, but you have to ask questions if you want answers. And I'm supremely good at getting answers, and I've become even better at something that used to be a weakness of mine, which is networking, whether that's at big box stores, and so I could give you, you know, a bunch of examples on how me just talking and asking questions has really advanced my business very quickly.
Well, what I want to do, let me take a quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk about the places that you're selling, because you've really expanded outside of Amazon, and I think that's really smart and really impressive.
Yes.
And I want to hear about some of that and how that went. I'm sure it was not easy as anything, mm-hmm. right? I mean, I'm sure it wasn't instant, you know, wave the wand and the unicorns came and stuff, right? I'm sure it was a challenge. And so I want to talk about that. So let's take a quick break.
Okay, sounds good.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit selleressentials.com for more information. That's selleressentials.com. All right, I knew this was going to be a great interview. Smart dude, just so mindful. I always, you know, watch people with their kids, and I watch and I admire them from afar. And you can kind of tell a lot about a person the way they treat their kids or as Andy Slammon says, you can see the joy in their family's faces. And man, I can hear it. I can hear it in this guy, and I just love it. We spent a lot of time talking about, you know, building up a business and really getting focused. And he uses a phrase that it's just going to resonate so well. Build floor-level relationships. I just love that. You know, think about that, floor-level relationships. So when you're dealing with retail and you're in there talking to the store, get in there, talk to the people on the floor of the store. That's where the decisions are made. That's where you could find out what's going on. That's how you learn where things are. And I just think that's so smart. I think the other thing that really stuck with me about Brendan is he's already planning for Q4. Think about that. You know, if you're in retail, you're planning for Q4, right? Those of people who were just at the toy fair, we missed it this year, but you're buying toys for the Q4. Well, he's smart enough to say, you know, I start in January. So just start thinking about evaluating how it went last time and what I'm going to do different. And I just think it's so smart, and it's not too late for us all. So get thinking about it. Let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back, and we're talking with Brendan Zarn. And Brendan is a longtime seller. You've been selling on eBay for almost 20 years, you know, in and out. But that's a good experience. You know, it was hard to sell a long time ago on eBay, wasn't it?
eBay today and eBay 20 years ago, I don't recognize the two. And you know, I was selling very intermittently throughout that time. My account is 20 years old, but they are so different this time around. So I definitely multi-channel through eBay, but nowhere near what I used to do. And even then it was small time, but that is one of the channels that I use. Yes.
But it's such a great foundation. You know, the concept, right? I mean, all these things are foundation blocks.
I think
if you look at your life, I can see it in here. You know, as I look at, you know, your answer, you know, you'd written me a book when I look through it, but it's so well done. And I can see the foundation. I can see how one thing leads to another, right?
Yep.
One thing leads to another.
Absolutely.
I love it.
Yep. Yep.
Love it. Love it. Love it. Okay. So you're selling on FBA, of course, that's your primary channel, but you're doing eBay a little bit. And you have some other sales. I'm interested to hear about other sales. What's that mean?
Okay, so prior to getting divorced, my ex-wife and I started a business. And she was a gymnastics coach at the time who took a traveling team out. And, you know, when you go to these competitions, there are vendors there that sell wares. And apparel was one of them. And long story short, we got the idea to try to also be one of those vendors and sell what is considered youth novelty spirit wear. And so we saw what the, you know, our competitors were doing, made it a little cuter, made it a little more fun, you know, marketed these things more appropriately, I think, to the group that was buying these goods. And the rest was history. So we had that business. Well, when we got divorced, I decided that I was going to walk away from that and, you know, just try to figure out how to make it 100% on my own. So I, throughout that process, from that time till now, I created a, we'll just call it a novelty gift business that's marketed to that same group. And it's very seasonal. It's winter seasonal. So I'm in season right now, but I do have an offline brand that I sell through Amazon and B,
okay,
at the events, as well as having an online presence. So I'm able to off my goods, so for lack of a better term, in three different areas. Amazon is included in one of those channels.
That's really interesting. And so, you know, you you know, the best part about you doing it at the events is you are in the market. You're actually seeing the person buy, right? You know exactly what they're buying. You see them pick it up and put it back down.
That is correct.
And walk over to something else. That's probably the best market research, right, that you could do.
I know this market up and down. I know what makes them tick. And having having FBA as a way to get rid of some of the stuff that is overstocked after an event has just been icing on the cake. But yes, I know that market very, 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 very well. So naturally, it made sense for me to create something that wasn't, you know, apparel, but would also attract those same eyeballs.
Let me ask a question on that then. So I'm an Amazon seller, right? Joe Blow is an Amazon seller. Is this something that they should go back and look at their own life and their experiences and say, I know – well, I'm an accountant, so I guess I know pens and pencils and, you know, adding machines. I don't think we should talk about that, or abacuses when I started, right? But is that something that, you know, logically to go back? Because, you know, one thing I hear from people is they want to be on another channel. They want to do different things. But in your model, I'm telling you, the thing I enjoy the most is you have the instant market research.
Yes.
And my bet is it just transfers so well to Amazon because you see it. You see the trend right there and you can make it easy, right? So I think that just is so smart. I wonder if there's a way for people to go backwards and say, you know, and Legos is a bad example, but shoes or whatever, you know, and to work their way backwards into something like that. I just think it's so smart because you also have a Shopify site, which is so smart. I mean, yep. You've gone all the way through and really have done all those things, which everybody says they want to do. Is that hard? I mean, is that really at this point the hardest thing?
Boy, that's a lot of question.
That's a loaded
answer,
question, yeah.
but it's an important question. I think every seller who sells through Amazon FBA exclusively as their business needs to take a long, hard look at that. And you have to be able to answer the question, you know, what happens if Amazon disappears tomorrow? What happens if, you know, you lose that income stream? Would you be in trouble financially? And the reason I ask myself that question is because before as we were starting the apparel business together, my ex and I, you know, I was doing things at night, like learning how to use WordPress, which provided me the ability to build websites really quickly after I learned it and went through those ropes and all of those things. And I was developing, I guess, these skills that would help me, you know, and culminate in this FBA thing. But every seller needs to ask themselves what would happen if FBA disappeared. And so I guess the point I'm trying to make is I have an exit plan. I was creating websites, affiliate websites, and earning affiliate income as sort of side income before I went 100% into the apparel. And I remember one of those websites at the time was making me about $1,000 a month, and I was selling high dollar blenders on this particular site. Well, that income stream disappeared overnight when Google changed their ranking algorithm. And so I went from, you know, making a steady $1,000 to absolutely zero, not understanding exactly why. And that's when I learned when you build a sandcastle on somebody else's sandbox, you don't have as much control as you think you do. And so while I'm not trying to scare people regarding Amazon FBA, what I am suggesting is have an exit plan. And so the reason I'm building brand number one out, and there will be brand number two in the works, is could I fall back on just brand A and then eventually brand B if I lost Amazon? And I want to be able to say yes to that. If I lost my Amazon FBA income, I would still be okay at the end of the day because of the brands that I built out. If that makes sense.
That makes perfect sense. If you listen to the interview I did with Brandon Dubsky, Brandon was one of the top 10 sellers on eBay. I mean, imagine that. Back in the day, he was number 7 or something in eBay. I mean, out of everybody selling, millions of people. And he had a huge business. And long story short, eBay opens up in China, opens an office, boom, all his product gets in there, copied cheaper, blah, blah, blah. He's out of business.
Mm-hmm.
He has to start over. Now, 80% of his revenue comes from his personal website. 20% comes from Amazon and eBay.
Yeah.
He has learned his lesson. He has proven that that could happen. And I think the thing that you know, the thing that to me that we know is going to happen, whatever is happening today will change tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
It's guaranteed.
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
You know, I mean, look at today's the 18th coming up. Guess what's going to happen? Rates are going up, mm-hmm. right? Postage rates just went up, right? How'd that affect your business? New rates are coming in from Amazon. How's that affecting your business? Stuff that was profitable might not be profitable. You know, all the different things that you can't control are going to happen. So having a B plan, I just think is so smart. And in your case, now a C plan, I just think it's even smarter.
Yep, I'm the same. I learned that lesson. And if you, I mean, you just go into the Edgar search, you know, read Amazon's 10K. They say it themselves. You know, our business model changes, and it changes rapidly. So you get your model as a retailer modeling Amazon needs to be adaptable, and you need to be able to change quickly. And so, you know, I can answer yes to that question. So one of the takeaways for the people listening really is have an exit plan. No one wants to see Amazon go away, but better be prepared than not prepared. And in the event, you know, something happens, you just never know.
And worst case is they become 30% of your sales and the 70% are on your own stuff. That's not a bad place to be.
Not at
right?
all.
You know, and thinking about that, or they become just your distribution company and you sell elsewhere. I mean, there's a lot of different things that can go on. And I think it's smart. And I see the smart people talking about that. You know, what's interesting to me is the fact that you were doing those event sales, because I've seen some really smart people talk about mall selling kiosks and things like that just in the season.
Yep.
Very similar concept. And I'm thinking to myself, you know, that's really smart. I mean, it just really is smart.
Yeah, you know,
okay.
I need to look into that too, because I got a lot of stuff I could liquidate in a mall kiosk. It's not a bad idea.
It was just so smart when you said, I think it was in 3P. They said, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, that's just so smart. It's really, really intelligent.
It's true.
So I'm interested that you don't call yourself an entrepreneur. I'm not sure I am either, to be honest with you. I'm risk averse. So tell me why you don't consider yourself an entrepreneur.
I'm going to try not to say the word hate, because I don't, you know, but I strongly dislike the word entrepreneur. It just doesn't sound like it fits me. I'm nothing more than a guy who's willing to try things and willing to screw them up enough until they start to work. And that has really served me well in my life. Just keep trying things until it starts to work. And, you know, you can call that entrepreneurialism, you know, that's great. I'm not a hustler or a grinder, you know, I'm a dad first, you know, and then I run businesses second. So with that, you know, thinking along those lines, that has, you know, focusing on my personal life and my relationship with my kid and, you know, my future children, should I be lucky enough to have more, has actually propelled me professionally farther, faster than I could have envisioned or dreamed. So here, you know, here I am, I'm mastering balance, and I'm doing it through, you know, my personal time. So that may or may not work for some people, but it is really, it's supremely effective in my life. So you call that what you want, entrepreneurialism, you know, I don't know. But,
well, let me ask a personal question.
Sure.
Do you think, had you not gone through this trauma of a divorce, right? They say a divorce is like a death, right? Because it's a marriage that dies,
yeah.
right? So do you think that you'd be in the same place had you not gone through that trauma?
I don't think so. And, you know, you fast forward to now, you know, my ex-wife and I have a great relationship, you know, because we share the daughter, you know, things are great. As much as they can be when you have two individuals
sure.
living in, you know, separate lives, separate households, that whole thing. But had that not happened, you know, I don't know, because I had to walk away from the only thing I knew at that time, which was the apparel business that we had created. So I had to go back into the workforce for a short amount of time. And of course, when that happened, it was almost like it's either now or never. You know what I mean? And then, of course, talking to John about him wanting to relaunch this program and let's get a case study together and all of those things falling into place, I just don't see that happening the way it did, having not gone through that quote-unquote trauma. So, you know, certainly a blessing in disguise. And I mean, again, I look back even at my own story, literally nothing to where I'm at now and actually where the business is going. It almost doesn't even seem real.
Do you think And this is another, I'm going to stay on this personal side because I think this is so touching. Sure. And I admire you as a dad. I always admire people the way they are with their kids. Mm-hmm. And I always watch that. There's a hopeless feeling that some people get when they're in that mire, down in that desperation, right? Mm-hmm. Do you feel like you have hope, right? I mean, at some point you started to distance yourself and you've really grown, right? Mm-hmm. That hope is there. I mean, there's no hopelessness. I can hear it in your voice. You see it. You're kind of certain about that success, right? I mean, how do you dig that out? You know, I mean, because it had to be tough. It had to be tough.
It was, you know, it was tough. It wasn't impossible. And I've actually, you know, I've spoken to some friends that have gone through similar things since then. And it's hard to give somebody that's in that situation advice because they're currently going through it and it's so painful and so confusing and life is up in the air. And the only answer that I could really give anybody that, you know, went through it like I did is it won't help you at the time I give you that advice. And that's time will end up healing all of this. And it really does. But as far as hope goes, I have so many opportunities in front of me right now. And I'm not saying like these aren't hypothetical opportunities. These are, Brendan, you need to pick A, B, and C, you know, in the next 2 weeks, or you need to pick, you know, D, E, and F. And then I have all of these opportunities that are concrete that I know are going to propel and advance, you know, where the business is headed while also staying grounded, you know, personally and being able to dedicate the amount of time that I want to. To my kiddo, I have more hope and more opportunity than I could have ever have dreamed of. I mean, it sometimes it doesn't seem real.
Right. Well, it's interesting because you're not clouded by anything. And so, you know, Dan Miller, I interviewed, and he said the same thing. He's like, Steve, I have to get rid of 10% of what I do every year. Mm-hmm. He said, I do it intentionally because I anticipate the next 10% that's going to fill it. But that means I'm getting rid of stuff that's profitable and that I still make money on, mm-hmm. but I got to make choices. And so that's what you're describing is you're going to have to make choices. You know, I'm looking at thinking about where you're located. And you are in Book Central, right? You were in the heart of the book man.
You have
book
no
man,
idea.
You've got some big booksellers in your market. Yep. I know a few of them. Mm-hmm. Greg Murphy, I personally know. He's an awesome guy. He's a mega bookseller. But he is really a liquidation book buyer. He's buying tractor trailer loads from companies, massive quantities, 52 Gaylords on a tractor trailer.
Yeah.
And it's just dumping huge volumes of books. But you have a lot of booksellers. I know a whole bunch of them in your market.
Oh, yeah.
How are you able to compete in that market with that much competition?
That's a real good question. I know of Greg, and I have a lot of respect for him and his model, and he's a very likable guy, and he's obviously very, very smart and very, you know, forthcoming with information about his business, which I think is, you know, a really good trust builder. But how does and he's a merchant fulfilled seller. he's doing FBA, but he wants to do volume. I think he does that primarily through merchant fulfilled. Maybe he didn't.
No, it's merchant fulfilled. Yeah. No, it's still merchant fulfilled. He sends them out by the Gaylord. Literally, I've seen the Gaylord
right, filled
with packages going out.
Yeah, but you know, and this is another thing I would say if somebody's just still trying to get their feet wet in Amazon, you know, whether it's books or not, is you can definitely compete. You know, where your competitors are. There are even two very large shoe sellers in this state. Too, that have a big presence there, but you know, none of that should scare you. None of it should scare me, and it doesn't. So I went to last summer, I don't recall exactly when it was, to a book sale I'm in the Columbus, Ohio market. I think Greg is in the Dayton, Ohio market. So we're only 45 minutes apart from each other, but I went to a sale, up and around where Greg, you know, where Greg's home base is. And I know that he sources here in Columbus, or at least he used to for a while. And, you know, at the time I was going to this sale, I thought, you know, I have no business being here. There's just no way, anything good could come out of it. But I had to make something happen. So I went to a book sale. I struck up a conversation with the, the person that was running it, and she alludes to me as I get there that there's a mega seller. She didn't use that term, but there's a mega seller that comes in the night before or days before the sale and essentially cleans them out of all of the profitable books. And then they start the sale, right? And so the public is left with the scraps, so to speak. And then after the public sale is over, they bag up all of these books and they set them essentially out on the curb for people to take for free. And I said, okay, well, that's kind of discouraging, but what I do know about books and, you know, the friends of groups is that they're usually older. It becomes cumbersome to move, you know, heavy amounts of books around all the time, you know, from the library to the sale, back to the library and carrying those things around. And so I asked this particular woman if in exchange for helping them move their stuff after the sale, if I could just take the free stuff that was left over and essentially make use of it. And you know, she agreed. Now here again, this could have been scraps, and it sounded like it was going to be, but because I had to know that it wasn't, you know, like I've got to try it before I can trust, you know, everything that everybody is telling me all the time. Long story short, I swept up about 400 to 500 books and shoved them all into my car. They were all free. Got them home, got them all checked in and sent out. And while there were clear duds, and if you saw my basement, you'd see, you know, talk about the mistakes you make in the business. I must have thousands of books in my basement. That
we all have thousands of mistakes. We all have thousands.
But there were enough in there that were still profitable, even after a mega seller comes in and cleans them out, even after a sale takes place. There were still enough profitable books in there to where these people are now a regular source of my used book inventory, and I pay nothing for it. The only thing I do is go and clean up their mess after the sale.
Well, there's two things you do. Okay, there's two things you do. So as I'm sitting here listening to it, I'm listening to you say you're not a hustler. I would argue that's not correct based on that story because, you know, first thing is you developed a relationship. You actually had a conversation with these people. You didn't come in like a vulture. You weren't disrespectful. You weren't pushing people out of the way, which a lot of people do.
Yep.
You were respectful and had a conversation with. You said, hey, quid pro quo. You do this for me. I'll do this for you. And they were like, hey, this is great. You know, so – you know, that's hustle.
Yep.
That takes nerve. It takes effort. It takes sales, right? You had to sell yourself. So I think there's some real value. But the lesson there is that you were able to get something for your time. And when you start in this business, you either have if you have a lot of money, most likely you wouldn't be starting this business, right? You have more time than money, they say.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually you get more money than time. You had time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what you traded. And I think it's genius. I think it's hustle. And I think that relationship, you say, is still strong and you're still sourcing there.
It is. I do help them, right? Because it does clean up their mess, provides me a good amount of inventory, and it is free. Not everything you do in this business, when you're looking, if you're in a situation like I was in, where you have pretty much nothing, but you want to get started, it's easy to take a story like this and go, well, he got books for free, like maybe I should go and try to get some stuff for free too. I don't know that that's necessarily the best advice. What I would say is yes, go and make the relationship. You had somebody on. Was her name Robin?
Robin Jacoby.
Yeah. And Robin, I think she was talking along the lines of the same thing, going into stores, you know, starting relationships up with managers or whoever's running this particular sale, and develop your network. That's actually really hard for a lot of people to do. And in some ways it can be challenging for me too sometimes. But what comes out of that, just to reiterate, are things like getting an inventory of 500 books that you paid literally nothing for, that earns you income, at least enough, you know, to keep the ball rolling or get the ball started. That's correct. Even if it was, even if it's part-time for you or something like that. I went full-time right away because I had nothing else. So this has been full-time for me for since it started. But do those things, start those relationships. And I, you know, Robin just was illustrating stuff that I have been doing, you know, ever since I became a quote unquote hustler or a quote unquote, you know, entrepreneur. And that's building, you know, floor level relationships with people and telling them exactly, I tell them exactly what I do. I do not hide what I do. I don't bend the truth. And boy, let me tell you what, it works and it's effective. It's very effective. So yes, keep building the relationships.
Well, I love the way you just called it floor level relationships. Let me tell you, your episode 70 something on my interviews, and I would say 68 of them say almost the same thing. They say it in their own way, but they're saying the same thing, is that the successful sellers have taken the time and have built those relationships,
yeah.
Right? They've really taken that time, and I think it's just so critical. Mm-hmm. You know, would you say, though, that your biggest strength as an entrepreneur is stepping out like that and kind of just, you know, just stepping out and just doing something different?
Yes. My unique selling point, Brendan's unique selling point, is I guess my lack of fear of getting the answer I need or getting an answer. A lot of times it's no, but a lot of times it's yes. You know, so if you want to go try to negotiate a deal, I go out and I ask. I'm very transparent with who I am, what I do, but more importantly, how I can help, you know? So that, and how I do it and how I approach it, I believe is my USP. And the nice thing about that is while it's unique to me, the formula is very basic and very simple. If a lot of successful sellers are saying this, the listening audience really needs to take heed. That's what makes me unique, the ability to put a deal together and do it really quickly. But you can also do it too. I think is it Robin Johnson? Is that her name?
The unstoppable entrepreneur.
Yeah, sorry, I'm sort of familiar with it, but I believe her story is similar, where maybe she was an introvert, and now look, she's, you know, it's world domination by Robin Johnson. Same thing. Go out and build those relationships. She's doing it. I do it. You should be doing it too.
Yeah, it's smart. So that means, though, that you probably have some weaknesses that tend to show. Now, I have two questions there. So,
sure.
You know, name some weaknesses, but then how do you find a way to work around those weaknesses? Because I think we all have weaknesses, and if we're honest with ourselves, right? But how do you get around them? Because some people just get swallowed up by their weakness. You know, oh,
yeah.
I'm going to fail because I just can't do this, and they do that Eeyore thing.
Yeah.
So give me both answers.
If you had to ask me what my weaknesses are, is my weakness in this business, and I'm sort of my own case study here, just to see how far I can take this without, you know, asking for help, is really wanting to grow to a certain level without relinquishing a single point of control. I've dabbled in like a paid lists where you had to have VAs and had a VA sourcing for me for a very small amount of time, but I don't like to babysit adults, and so, you know, on one hand, you know, somebody might say, well, if you want to get to the $2 million level selling, you're going to need things like a prep. So you're going to need some sourcers. You're going to need these things. And so here I am saying, I want to get to the $2 million level in sales. And this is an arbitrary number. I just picked it out of a hat. Without any of that, without any help whatsoever. And there might be, you know, real high volume sellers, you may even be thinking the same thing. Like, that's going to be impossible if you, you know, want to continue to see your kid. And that may very well be true, but that's a weakness of mine. I have no interest in giving up any control whatsoever. I like ordering goods online and having them come straight here so I can see, touch, and feel it, and then send it out after that. Now, that may not be the best use of my time, but for now, it's something that I'm just not interested in giving up. And again, that might change. I may learn as I go, but I perceive that as a weakness, because you do have to delegate certain things in life and in business, and I understand that. I haven't been willing to do that at this stage.
Yeah, but you know what? It sounds to me like because you're doing a really good volume, is you have become efficient. So maybe that's your workaround, is you forcing efficiency because you've identified that your time with your family is the most critical time with your daughter. That's it.
That's very
there. Are no,
very
that's
true.
Not going to give up, right? So you're forcing yourself to be efficient. I'm not so sure that's not a good workaround.
Right. Well, no, I've got a private label product coming in 2 months, and in it. Long term, it's going to be followed by product 2 and product 3 that are going to be tied to my offline businesses. Here again, in the interest of keeping, you know, my portfolio as diverse as I can, and I'm looking at it and I'm working backwards from the numbers. Like I have an expectation of what product A is going to be producing on a monthly basis, and then the time it's going to take me to process that. I'm looking at it and I'm saying to myself, I think I'm efficient enough to be able to hit these numbers with no help. So believe me, if I bomb, I'm going to find out either way.
You're going to bomb on
your
own.
I'm going to bomb on my own, that's for sure. And right. At that point, I'll go, you know what, I was wrong. That was maybe a little bit narcissistic of me to think along those lines. Whatever, it's okay. We'll change it and we'll grow from there. But for now, that's it. I don't want to give that up. I don't want to give control up.
Well, let me tell you, here's another little secret. Not my secrets of successful sellers, but here's another common trait.
Yeah.
For whatever reason, and it's a myriad of reasons, and I actually have some of the reasons, which is really fascinating, mm-hmm. but they have been able to take these self-imposed limits, and they are self-imposed, and they were put upon you. They're way back in your past, you know, oh, you can't, you know, that's the safe, take a job, 40 hours a week, work for 30 years. Oh, you can't take that. Don't jump off that couch. You're going to break a leg, which none of us do, or think about what you used to do as a kid, right? Mm-hmm. All those doubts that were put in your head, you created these self-imposed limits. Really successful sellers have been able to push those limits way out. And so I'll give you a good example. So I set my own goal this year. We had a really great year last year. We're part-time. And so we said, oh, boom, we're going to go up 60% from last year, which is huge. I mean, it's a big number to begin with, more than most full-time sellers. And boom. And then I interviewed Bob Steele. And Bob Steele shook me to my core because Bob is a full-time purchasing manager for a company. He's been there for 30 years, he's a few years away from retirement, loves what he does,
uh-huh.
really good at it. And he did almost $900,000 in sales. And he said, Steve, I would have hit $1 million, but we moved and that just made it complicated and I wanted to get things right.
Mm-hmm.
And here he is part-time.
Yeah.
Real part-time. And he's like, nah. You know, I should have hit $1 million, but this year I'll do $1.5 million or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And that just changed my self-imposed limit, which I thought was pretty, you know, wow. Boom, it blew it up. Because that's what successful people do, is they see, once you see somebody can do something, you're like, well, I can do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what they do. And so I think that's a great trend, and I see it, and I love the way you've described it. I think that's really – when you think about, you know – getting started. And I don't know that you had fear because you really had no choice.
That's right.
Your fear was having nothing, right?
No, I mean, as I was starting this, and I didn't allude to this, but, you know, I was extremely aggressive the minute I knew that I wasn't going to be going to work that following day. So, I had people working on my resume. My phone was ringing, like it was buzzing. And so I thought, you know, all right, well, for a period of time, like maybe I'll have to go, you know, find something else. And then John was like, you know, his launch of, you know, 1.0 Amazon FBA or whatever it was called. It was successful financially. But it was clearly missing some pieces. It was outdated and all that stuff. So I thought, you know, worst comes to worst, this would be a fun project, that could buy me some time. But I was, you know, I was pretty aggressive, you know, in sort of getting my act together, for lack of a better way to put it. At that time, but I didn't need it. You know, I was willing to advance this forward, and the reach that Amazon provided. Like, I guess I hadn't thought about it until I could actually see the numbers. And you know, I sold one of my own used books for, I think it was $155, and that's kind of when the light bulb went off. Somebody just bought this book off my shelf, and it was not a textbook, for $155. I need to explore this further. Like, this is big stuff. And took it and, you know, ran with it, and of course the rest is history. But never once did I have a fear-based mentality. But you're right. I had failure could not have been an option. I didn't have a choice. I didn't have time.
Well, plus the other thing is you didn't get a chance to plan. And I think there's a paralysis that can happen, that paralysis by analysis, right? Yeah. People are planning. And I see them out there. Oh, do I need to get this tool? Do I need to get this tool? Quite frankly, how many of us for a long time did 30-up labels? And I've even seen some pretty large sellers say that they just within this last year got rid of 30-up labels.
Yeah.
But I remember having my living room full of 30, you know, product and these labels, and then trying to match these labels to those. It was crazy. And then, you know, somebody reading off the computer, oh, what is that? Oh, that's this code. Oh, here, that's that.
Yeah.
And it take forever. And that pain makes you stronger. Mm-hmm. So you didn't get a chance to plan for it. I think that's a pretty, pretty neat thing. What's the best advice that you've ever been given?
Oh, the best advice that I've ever been given is really, I don't know who said it, or I mean, it's been said many times, but it's really to kind of dig deep and find your why. And I'm sure someone on your podcast has probably mentioned this.
Joy Packard. That's a Joy Packard quote.
Okay. Everything really falls into place after that. So really in my life, at this stage of my life, you know, I want to raise exceptional children and spend as much of my life with them directly as I can. And that personal advice is actually the best professional advice, because it really kind of put me in my place and taught me balance, and then kind of forced me to act on it. So really that has actually been the best professional advice that I've ever received in that.
So what's your why? Is it freedom of time to allocate to what you want? Is that what you would say it is? Because it's not money. I can clearly tell it's not money.
No, it's not money. The money's coming, and that's a wonderful thing. It really is. It's just buying time. You know, I don't want to miss a recital. I don't want to miss a dance. I don't want to miss those things. You know, I had my mother, you know, she missed a lot of that stuff. I was raised by a single mother. And, you know, I don't know if she regrets that or not.
I'm sure she does.
She was doing what she had to do at the time. And that's an okay thing. But I don't want to miss those opportunities. I want to be there and see them. I've had the chance to do that over the course of the last, 7 years or so. I haven't missed much. And for that, I'm really grateful.
You know, it's like the lights just went on. Your mom didn't have that option. What could she have done that wouldn't have been using her hands or mind or whatever? Because it's a physical world back then, right? The internet is so fresh. This opportunity that we have where you can literally use somebody else to do the service for you that you send in there.
Yeah.
It's incredible. You know, kick it off, send a big order in, go on vacation and stuff sells and you get paid and you didn't touch it again, right? Or you can even order online and have it go somewhere else. But just that didn't exist for your mom, you know, and how lucky are we that you have that opportunity? And I just think that that's really neat.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be pretty organized to be able to handle this by yourself. What are your personal habits, do you think, that help really keep this focus?
My personal habits are, you know, dad first, work second. So, you know, I allocate a certain amount of time per week to kid. Right, so playtime, cooking, dancing, reading books before bedtime. When it's time with kid, it's time with kid. There's no, you know, if I'm stuck in a choice here between filling a box or, you know, playing with the kid, I'm always going to default to the kid. So I allocate a certain amount of time per week to that. I allocate a certain amount of time towards FBA, and then I allocate a certain amount of time to the offline venture. And through doing that, you know, just like you said, I've become remarkably efficient at, you know, getting the things done that I need to get accomplished in order to create the amount of earnings that I, you know, I feel like I need. To me now, it's just a challenge. You know, I'm making enough Do I want to make more? Sure, I'm going to challenge myself to try to earn more while still being, you know, the same amount of efficient, while, you know, allocating the same amount of hours to each part of my life. So that's really those are my personal habits, writing these things down, and sticking to them.
You almost like put yourself in the zone, though, it sounds like, which is kind of cool. And that's a very rewarding feeling when you accomplish that. Boom, I had 20 hours, got it done in 19. Boom, I'm in the zone. Boom, I move on to the next thing. I mean, that's pretty rewarding.
Right. I mean, yeah, those of you that have children at home and you're trying to run this business, you can relate to how impossible it is to get anything done. Because you're compelled to play with the kid, and then you got task A, B, and C that need to be completed. My ship would sink if I had to do both at the same time. So really, out of sheer necessity and my very one track mindedness, I have to do it the way I do it. Otherwise, nothing will get done. So when kid is in front of dad, it's kid time, you know. And then when kid goes to bed, or if kid's off at mom's, then it's work time. And it just, for me, it works remarkably well. Like, it's, again, it's very balanced and
you forced yourself to become efficient. I'm telling you, that's a skill. That's a skill.
Yeah.
Most people are not efficient. They get a lot, they spend a lot of time and get very little work done. If they just got the work done, they would be amazed at how much time.
Yeah.
You don't get a lot of time to read or listen to stuff. How do you keep sharp on this? Where are you skill learning?
Oh, that's another good question. You can be involved in too many Facebook groups. Like, I really believe that you can get paralyzed by too much information, right? Information overload. But I do suggest finding Facebook groups and getting the answers to the questions that you need to get answered through groups. There's a lot of very, very solid information that is disseminated through these groups. And there's misinformation too, but throughout the course of learning how to make this a go, you will develop a skill yourself to weed out what is correct and what isn't after a while, regarding the information that is passed in and out of Facebook groups. And you don't even necessarily, I'm not extremely active in any of the groups that I am in. I'm a contributing expert in a consulting group that I do work in. And so I'm more active there than I am in any of the other groups, but I stay sharp by going sort of behind the scenes, asking questions of people who are active in the groups, that I feel like I can trust. Bookseller groups, I'll reach out to a very few people that post frequently, that answer questions very thoroughly, and they have helped me as well. And you just rinse and repeat in the other groups. Keep your eyes and your ears open, listen. But that's how I stay fresh. Mm-hmm. I get my information through the people that I feel like I can trust, and then I run with it. I don't sit there and contemplate what could or could not go wrong. I just advance it. I got the question answered, and then I advance my business the way I need to. So how I stay fresh professionally through Amazon is that way. And then, on the offline ventures, I really don't mastermind, even though I do suggest that you can learn a lot from, being involved in masterminds or creating your own. So maybe that's that's something that I need to look into a little bit more.
Well, let me give you my next tip. Okay, so this is a great, you're hearing my book that I'm writing. I'm writing a book because here's another little tip. Very few masterminds really work because very few people really know how to do a mastermind.
Yeah.
What works is networking, and you're describing networking. That's what it is, right?
Sure.
That's really what it needs to be, is that getting together, whether it be online or in person, whatever, and having candid discussions, and because every problem you have, somebody has already had and had to deal with. And even if they don't have the answer, they can tell you the thing that don't do. Don't do this because this will happen. Oh, okay, great. That's another one off the list, because you probably were thinking the same thing. And so that's the beauty of that, that networking. And it's just such a smart, smart way. Again, successful sellers, what do? They network. So there's a pattern here. We're noticing a pattern.
Yep.
All right. Well, you know the goal of this podcast, right, is to help people who are stuck and get past that point of stuck. And, man, I think you've given some amazing things and a lot of great solid advice on how to, you know, put your head down, do the work, and just – I love it, love it, love it. Mm-hmm. But give me a tip or trick, something that we can put in place in our business tomorrow that will help people move forward.
Sure. So, you know, I alluded to the first one, which was map out an exit plan, right? What would you do if Amazon disappeared? Be adaptable, be versatile. And I would write these things down, get them on, you know, get this on paper. And start that process, you know.
Kind of an emergency plan, right? In corporate America, we all have an emergency plan. It's always in the bottom right-hand desk drawer, and you only pull it out when there's an emergency. So you're suggesting doing that for your business. That's smart.
I do, absolutely. Always have an exit plan or a plan B. And then the other one is, you know, Amazon does, and I think they've stated this for the last three straight years now, they do about a third of their total revenue in October and December. Okay, so what I believe you need to do is get the notepad out again and then start writing out your revenue goals for the fourth quarter. And this is something that, you know, you should be doing right now. So do that this week. I started preparing for the next fourth quarter, the first of the year. So if you're in retail, which you are, you have to prepare like a retailer. Right. So if you want to earn $100,000, I'm throwing big numbers out, but if you want to earn $100,000 in Q4, what steps do you need to take right now to help you get there? Right. Are you setting aside $5,000 a month to allocate to purchases that are going to go live in October, in November and December? Are you purchasing post holiday gift sets and breaking those down to create fourth quarter bundles that become impossible to copy? These are the things that you need to be thinking about immediately. You must, in order to succeed in this type of retail business, you've got to have a fourth quarter focus in quarter one, two, and three, and that will pay dividends for you as your business grows. Now, I didn't have the luxury of being able to prepare like I am for this coming Q4 last year, so I just had to trot along, and I learned a lot of stuff along the way. The fulfillment center fiascos with getting stuff on time and going to redistribution centers before they hit fulfillment centers, and I mean it was a nightmare. But I just kept going, went with the flow, was continuing to reinvest all of the funds that I had, and I sort of took my time. This year, I'm going to have a much more accelerated and a much more aggressive Q4 plan. And like I said, I started making purchases and kind of mapping out how that last 3 months was going to go January 1st. And it is still a focus of mine. My basement is full of opportunity for Q4. And I think that that's an important point in this business. So if you take nothing away from this podcast, start writing your Q4 goals down now and work backwards from them. Because you don't want to get caught in a situation where you're too late.
That's smart. And I love the fact that you learn some things and you get sharper. I always describe it this way. It's a knife, right? And it's a double-edged sword. And there's a little – every time you learn something, it gets a little sharper. And eventually that point gets to really there. So I love it. All right. What's the best way to get in touch with you, Brandon? You'll take advice, right? You'll give advice or talk
to
people.
You better believe
right?
it. I've got nothing, you know, nothing to sell, no lists, no anything like that. But I am happy to talk shop with people that that have questions. You know, I'll do what I can to answer your questions. Just look me up on Facebook. I think it's just my first name, dot my last name, Brendon, B-R-E-N-D-O-N, dot Zahrndt, Z-A-H-R-N-D-T. Feel free to add me. Let me know, you know, you heard of me or you heard the podcast, because I use Facebook pretty much exclusively professionally. So if I don't quite recognize your name, I might not be real quick to add you. So just mention that you heard the podcast, whatever. We'll talk shop and go from there.
And I'll have a link for it. Man, I appreciate you taking the time. I wish you nothing but success, especially with that young daughter.
Yeah.
Just have a great year. I look forward to seeing what's coming up next for you, and I'm sure it's going to be successful.
Awesome.
Man, just thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Stephen. I really appreciate it.
I hope you enjoyed that interview as much as I did. Again, you know, build floor-level relationships. Let that sit with you as you start thinking about your Q4. Start planning now. It's not too early. What worked, right? Well, the last Q4 is fresh in your mind. What worked? What didn't work? What would you do different? Now's the time to make those decisions and start putting those pegs together. Start building that model. Start putting it, where am I going? How am I going to get there? And then just start filling it in as you go along. Little notches and just keep filling it in. I hope you enjoyed it. Check us out, ecommercemomentum.com. Lots of cool stuff out there. I've got a great interview coming up next and just another superstar, and I hope you enjoy it. Hey, take care, and thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.